Unrolled with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome to Robots episode 132. I am Jana, and today we will be hearing from David Lang and Eric Stackpole about their open source underwater robot. But first, as always, here are the news with Christine.
Thank you, Jana. This week's TED Global Conference dedicated an entire session to the peaceful use of drones. The session was opened with a demo by Raffaello D'Andrea and his Flying Machine Arena team, which you may remember from previous reports. The theme of D'Andrea's talk was machine athleticism, which he defines as the ability of machines to perform dynamic feats that fully exploit their physical capabilities. His slideless, drone-filled talk showed quadrocopters swooping through the air to serve a glass of water without spilling a drop, and a quadrocopter flying with only two propellers, among other athletic feats. It was followed by a talk by Lin-Pin Ko, a professor at ETH Zurich, who uses drones for conservation projects across the world, from Nepal to Indonesia. In a third talk, Andreas Reptopoulos, founder of MatterNet, explained how a network of drones could be used to provide the roughly 1 billion people that have to live without road access for at least part of each year with essential goods like medication. Further talks in the session included sci-fi author Daniel Suarez speaking about the risks posed by autonomous lethal drones, and Stanford's Greg Asner on creating complex aerial images of how human activities affect our ecosystem. In less peaceful news, the small remote-controlled robot Sphero by Orbotix won first Augie Award for hardware at this year's Augmented World Expo, or AWE 2013, with their augmented reality game Sharky the Beaver. They've also just released a new AR game with zombies called The Rolling Dead, which uses Sphero as a fireball shooting warrior. For more information on this week's TED Global Conference or on Sphero, visit us at www.robohub.org.
OpenROV is an open-sourced, remotely operated underwater vehicle created for exploration and educational purposes. It's still in its early stages, but could ultimately become a great tool for underwater explorations. The software and hardware of OpenROV is all open-sourced and relies on a community of enthusiasts to make it better. Eric Stackpole and David Lang are the founders of this ever-evolving project. They spoke to our reporter Ron about the inspiration behind OpenROV, the communal effort that is advancing this robot, and the potential future uses it may fulfill.
Can I firstly welcome you both to the podcast?
Thank you, by the way, for your interest in this. We're stoked to be on the show.
If we can start by you both introducing yourselves and state your roles in the project.
Yeah, so my name is David Lang, and I'm one of the co-founders of OpenROV. I'm also a contributing editor at Make Magazine and writing a book called Zero to Maker.
Cool. And I'm Eric Stackpole. I'm the other co-founder of OpenROV. I'm a mechanical engineer and just general tinkerer. I'm really interested in the design and use of telerobotics for exploration. Yeah, so both David and I are in our late 20s or mid to late 20s. We've been working on OpenROV for about 2, maybe 3 years if you look at the very beginning. That's kind of where we're at. It's really nice to be young enough to still be foolish, but old enough to be taken seriously.
Can you describe the OpenROV project?
Sure. So OpenROV is an open source build as a kit robot that has a video camera on it and you can drive it around underwater. So ROV stands for remotely operated vehicle, and our name OpenROV just is saying that it's an open source remotely operated vehicle. I think a lot of people are familiar with open source. They know that that means that, you know, for software, for instance, the source code that makes that software work is available for everyone to look at and perhaps modify. But we're not only open source software, we're also open hardware. And that means that the CAD files, the design ideas, the bill of materials, and the instruction details are all listed on our website for free, so that people can build their own robot and make their own modifications to the hardware as well. And then in addition to being open source and open hardware, we're also crowdsourced. And that's probably the most important part of what the robot's all about. We rely on our community to come up with ideas of how to make the robot better. So it's continuously evolving. Yeah, and that's kind of the idea.
And so that's the robot. And I think another big part of the project is the community. So, you know, Eric and I started this. We had an idea of what we wanted to do, and we had some preliminary designs, but it wasn't quite ready to go in the water. And so we asked the internet for help, and we, you know, put up the website openrov.com, and now we've attracted, you know, thousands of people from all over the world who are contributing to the design and doing, it's kind of a distributed R&D network. So as much as it is an actual underwater robot, it's also a community of, you know, DIY ocean explorers.
So is this an evolving prototype to market kit in a nutshell?
Yeah, it's definitely a project in process, right? So what, you know, basically this kit is a prototype and we're all kind of working. So it's definitely a kind of a trick to create something that is still has a lot of potential to be improved, but we think that that's where the real beauty and magic of the project is.
The OpenROV, I believe, is using a BeagleBone CPU, RC motors, and devices that I can almost get anywhere. Is this its goal?
Yeah, you're touching on a really important point. So, you know, a very big part of why OpenROV works, you know, what makes it work as far as being a low-cost solution that a community can really get behind is that, like you say, we're using almost exclusively off-the-shelf parts. I like to say that we're cleverly misusing off-the-shelf parts. Right, every aspect of the robot, essentially, you can buy just as a regular consumer. The motors that it uses to drive through the water are actually motors that are meant for RC airplanes, but we found a way to make them waterproof and able to withstand aquatic conditions. The camera, instead of being a very specialized custom camera for robots, is just a USB high-definition webcam. It plugs into our BeagleBone computer, which is kind of a maker product that anyone can buy. That computer hosts the web server, so you can log into the ROV's IP address and see what the ROV sees, and you can control it through a platform that's basically like Arduino. It's got a little Arduino microcontroller on it with some other stuff. The motors are controlled with speed controllers. It uses batteries that are readily available. Even the tether that goes down to the ROV is just regular twisted pair wire, and we communicate using a device that's used to talk Ethernet through your house's AC line that we've figured out a way of using safely.
And, you know, we hear from a lot of researchers who really like that aspect of the project, right? They have the money to buy expensive ROVs, but they say, you know, we really like the fact that we can, you know, take yours apart, repair it. And things go wrong out in the field that we can you know, kind of modify and adjust as needed on the fly with readily available parts. So the reason we did that is because we didn't have any money, and that's how we put it together. But it turns out that that's become like a big feature for a lot of users.
So where and how are you building and developing these ROV DIY kits?
It started in my garage. I had a house in Cupertino, and when we started putting parts together there, you know, when we launched our Kickstarter project, you know, we were expecting to sell tens of ROVs maybe, and we ended up selling well over 100 kits. So suddenly, right, it scaled, and we had to figure out very quickly how to kind of have a mini manufacturing business. So that wasn't big enough. We eventually moved to the place right now, which is this office in Berkeley, kind of right next to the bay. And what we do is we allow people to order in batches. We have a period where we sell ROVs, maybe a few months. And then let's say at the end of 1 or 2 months, perhaps we've sold 100 ROV kits. At that point, we buy all the parts, get them here, and then we kit them out. We put all the parts from various boxes into individual kits that we then send out to people.
Yeah, so we have these batches that go out every 4 to 5 months that are, essentially another version of the project, integrating all of the community feedback and features.
And every batch so far has had improvements compared to the last one. I mean, I guess being kind of a controls nerd or an engineering nerd, I really look at what we're doing almost like a control system. You know, we have an output and we have a desired input. Basically, we send these ROV kits out. We get a bunch of really awesome feedback from the community of ways of making it better, increasing the performance, lowering the cost. Then we integrate that and then feed it back into the process that we're already running to improve it. And so that way, we're able to really kind of constantly make the ROV a better thing. We're not selling a finished product. We're selling a process.
So stepping back, when did you decide to take this project on?
Well, I really myself have always really liked just telerobotic exploration in general. Before I was doing this, I was doing spacecraft engineering, and that was really cool because it's space exploration. And before that, I was building robots that I could go explore the dorms with. It occurred to me that the underwater environment is really an underappreciated place, not just from the, understanding the environment standpoint, but just raw exploration. There's so much stuff down there that's just never been seen before. And that was really exciting. I was going to grad school at the time, and our lab had a few robots around. And I kind of started getting excited about the idea of building an underwater robot that you could explore these places with without needing the huge lab standing behind you. I heard about this underwater cave in Northern California that was rumored to have gold at the bottom of it. And around that time, David heard about the project I was doing. I was already starting to build these little prototypes, and he got in touch with me, and I don't know, he was pretty excited about it, I guess. And
just kind of hearing that story is something I wanted to get involved with, and I figured a good way to help would be to help, publish the designs and get the word out. And what that has turned into is really kind of basically meeting all of these people online and kind of cultivating that community. And really, it's kind of just blossomed from there. It's something that's kind of become much bigger than either of us. It's all the input of all these people, all the support on Kickstarter. And, we're still getting the design feedback, but now we're starting to see how people are using that. And so it's become this kind of really community-driven project.
But the big message is, you can do this too. And that's what really, I think, is pushing us further than just building our own robot for our own purposes. It's like we've discovered that doing something that would normally be this huge endeavor really doesn't take that much. With the kind of technology available today, you can do it. You can be an explorer. So really, once David and I met up, I think we had the combination of skills that allowed us to really just push that forward. And that's what we're trying to do, really, is show people that anyone can be an explorer. Anyone can have amazing discoveries and do this intense innovation that really, I think, can be a big impact on the world.
Do you have a timeline for the project? Is there an end date?
The end of the week. We need to get a bunch of kits out by the end of the week. I mean, it's just moment to moment. I mean, we're really racing to catch up with the community, and I think what we're seeing is that it's growing from there. I mean, it's one of those things where we're learning how useful this can be. And
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people ask us, you know, like, right, what's the end goal that we're trying to get to? As if, you know, the open ROV at some point will be something that's completely locked and solid. And then we've finished, we've completed our task. I mean, perhaps at some point the technology will kind of reach this asymptote where it's sort of stabilized and we're now pushing boundaries with other technologies on board. But I think both of us really look at this as a continuous work in progress. I mean, technology in general doesn't reach an end. It's an ongoing process. And OpenROV should be an ongoing process as well. You know, just like we'll never stop exploring, I don't think we'll ever stop innovating. And that's the way we want to stay.
Why was it important to come up with this type of solution, as there are many other ROVs on the market?
I think the key for us was that we just wanted to do it. I mean, it was something that we wanted to do for ourselves. I mean, if it was never a goal to, you know, to start a company, the goal was to explore this cave. And so I think when you start there, when you start with this kind of fundamental desire of a small group of people, everything just kind of builds up from there. Of course, there are other off-the-shelf solutions, but I think what we've found is that by creating this kind of place on the internet where people can work together is really a powerful tool.
Creating a do-it-yourself for all levels of underwater explorers means that some of the dangers have been removed, making it affordable to explore the depths. Have the exploration projects that you spoke about on the website returned any of their feedback as yet, or is it early days?
Totally. I mean, there are numerous expeditions and ideas for adventures that people have come to us with. Some people are very legitimate, you know, perhaps even world-renowned explorers, and they have ideas of places they'd like to go, and they've asked us if an open ROV might be useful, and we've kind of brainstormed. But I think what's even more exciting than that is the ones where they're not coming to David and I saying, hey, can you guys help us out with the ROV you have? It's people who buy an ROV. They're actually building the kit themselves because they have an expedition they want to go on. They have something that they want to do. So, I mean, if you go on to openrov.com and you go to the forums, there's a place where it has adventure ideas is one of the threads for the forum. And if you go there, you'll see tens of ideas that people have had. Underwater cities that, you know, were flooded, when a dam was built, or, you know, crazy phenomena with fish that they want to explore, or, you know, I mean, there's this cave story, which is a really exciting story about, you know, lost treasure and unexplored places. That happened where I grew up. So if that's, you know, that's something that happened close to me, how many other crazy stories are out there, not just around the country, but around the world?
But it's also still really early. I mean, to put this in perspective, I mean, we just shipped the Kickstarter kits last December.
Yeah.
And even in the past 2 months, I mean, the ROV has, you know, just, I think it's been a 10x improvement of performance. So we're just really at the very, very, very beginning of what's actually possible when these things are out in the field. So we don't have the stories of people like finding treasure or, you know, mapping unknown parts. That stuff hasn't happened as much yet.
But we think
that's just around the corner.
Yeah, we're just getting to the point now where the ROVs are starting to get video back of people driving them around. I mean, this is an extremely exciting period for us.
And they're very close to, you know, we're not far away from, you know, having internet control, which is really a big game changer. So it's not just people out exploring in their backyards; it's people exploring and then sharing what they're looking at with everyone else. So, you know, we're catching up to the existing technology, but we're also exceeding it in many respects.
Is your project limited to ROVs? Is there any options for AUVs? What's the future?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, like we mentioned before, one of the key aspects of OpenROV is we want it to be something that's useful in many different contexts. So as an initial kind of use case, it's designed to be controlled through a tether where you can see what it's seeing live and you can control it live. But we've designed in a lot of features that I think allow for other possibilities. For instance, the ROV has its own onboard battery pack, which can power it for about an hour. That's unusual compared to most of the other ROVs out there. And one of the main reasons behind doing it that way is that this way someone could cut the tether. It's already got a full onboard computer. They could very plausibly tell the ROV to dive down, fly around for a while, collecting some sort of data, and then come back up. So although we're focused on one specific thing, because we believe that if you're going to do something, you should do it well, we've made sure that it has a lot of ability to do other things. The electronics tube that everything mounts in is specifically designed so that you can put other electronics on board. So I'm really excited about what I think the community will come up with as far as autonomous vehicle operations, computer vision, things that are in kind of the realm of robotics. And then also there's a payload module on the bottom. The ROV has these four spaces for threaded rods that are 50 millimeters apart. So as people come up with bathymetry sensing sets, robot arms, metal detectors, Geiger counters, whatever you come up with, you can mount that as a payload onto the ROV. So certainly, what you're mentioning, the idea of using the ROV for applications outside of just looking around telerobotically, that's something you really want to do. And then there's other developments that I think will come on down the line. We're interested in being able to do acoustic navigation. We're interested in possibly coming up with other ROV designs in the distant future. This is just the beginning for sure.
How did you go about funding and supporting the project, and what is Kickstart providing you?
One of the things I did is at the beginning, I switched from going out to, restaurants that would serve pasta and stuff, and I just started having Top Ramen. And that gave me a little bit of money out of pocket to help start buying parts. And David, I think you moved from an apartment to a boat, right? Yeah. That was helping out.
Yeah. We definitely have bootstrapped this in the sense that the early prototypes were things that we were paying for. You'd be surprised at how far you can get with these off the shelf tools and access to makerspaces, right? Like we have had access to laser cutters and 3D printers and CNC machines because we have tech shop memberships.
Oh yeah, tech shop is a big part.
So, it doesn't take a multi-million-dollar, venture-backed company to get a robot prototype together anymore. So, we did put our project on Kickstarter, and that was hugely important for us to raise money that way and to get the initial kits out. It was also, I'd say, equally as important for us to just getting the word out. I think a lot of people heard about us through Kickstarter. I think that is actually more than just funding. That's really a kind of a community rallying point. But that is the next step that we did, and we've just been selling robots since then. So, we've been a profitable company.
Yeah, and another important aspect, because a lot of people ask us about this, that they're interested in that we bootstrap this and that we haven't taken out any venture capital yet or anything like that. One of that is it's easy to think of spending. How did you pay for all the things that cost money? But a lot of our kind of strategy has also been in saving. The things, if you look at almost any tech startup company, the things they spend the most money on are research and development and engineering hours. They're hiring, very qualified people to do in-house engineering. But the very nature of kind of, I guess you'd call it our business model, but really our way of having fun is to involve everyone. These ideas that are brilliant are coming from our community of, over 1,600 people across 50 countries. That's research and development from people who are really passionate about this. They're often professionals in the industry, but they're doing it because they enjoy it, just like we do. So we don't.
Some
have
of them
those
are high school students too.
So yeah, really sure. Diverse. Yeah, that's better than hiring specific engineers who have one way of looking at things. Is like David saying, we may have a professional ocean engineer who looks at a problem one way, and then we may have a high schooler who's programming robotics that's using a different computer, doing something a different way. And the aggregate way of thinking, I think, is even more powerful than bringing the pros in. And it's a hell of a lot more fun, too.
By taking community comments, how are you structuring their input into the results?
There's a lot of different channels. I mean, we do have people who now are here at the office. We have our forums, which are really, really lively places. So, I mean, if you posted a question, you'd almost certainly get an answer within an hour or two from someone somewhere around the world who's already been through that issue. So we have our forums, which are very lively. We're on Facebook and Google Plus, and we have development calls every week on Google Plus Hangouts. And then we have build days. So we have probably a dozen people just coming to our office in Berkeley tomorrow just to test robots and drive them around and see what we can come up with. So there's a lot of different touch points, but we're communicating with these folks all the time, and it doesn't really feel like a formal communication. We've just figured out the best way to do it because we've been trying to get in touch with or stay in touch with so many different people at once. So that these kind of systems have emerged.
Yeah, we're getting to the point too now where it's not just people talking about their ideas with us. I mean, there's a lot of things on the forums where there's a discussion between different people in the community amongst themselves, and we haven't even, sometimes we haven't even yet had our own input to it, but they're helping each other out. And that's really where we want to get to, is as the community grows, it'll be self-sustaining. People can help each other with their builds, with different ideas. There's some things that are way far away from what we're doing ourselves. Like, for instance, right now internally, we're not designing a robot arm, but if you go to the forums, there's tons of discussions about what the right way to do that might be. And then another thing I wanted to touch on is also testing. That's a huge part of hardware development. And like, there's a guy in Germany who has a pressure tank, and he's been able to test our main electronics housing and send us the results. There are people who are doing measurements on the electrical characteristics of the RV, and they're sending us results. I mean, the thing is, an engineer, I guess, could do this as a job, but it's actually a lot of fun to kind of dive into this stuff. And so just people being interested in that has really actually been a tremendous thing for us.
I too have an engineering background, but I'm not used to the tech shop concept, which is not common here. Is this a US concept? Fill us in on that.
I wouldn't say that at all. I mean, this falls into what I would call the maker movement. And I'm writing a book about this right now. It's called Zero to Maker, because 2 years ago I didn't have a technical background at all. And it wasn't until I really showed up at Tech Shop, which is a maker space where, they have all these tools and they have members who use them. And really learned how to do it. And there was a big community there. What I found was there was a big community there of people who were willing to teach me how to use these machines. And the hackerspace and the makerspace phenomena is happening all over the world. I mean, these spaces don't take much to get up and get going. They just takes a group of people who kind of show up and kind of occupy like some sort of a space and then figure out, slowly accumulate different tools. I mean, they're in, if you go to, I think it's hackerspaces.org, you can see the map of where these are all over the globe. I mean, it's just been a global phenomenon in the past 3 or 4 years that these spaces are becoming accessible. So the digital fabrication tools continue to get cheaper. I mean, we're seeing this with desktop 3D printers, all sorts of CNC machines. They're just getting more and more affordable. And what that means is that more and more people are going to have access, and more people are going to be creating things and contributing to projects like OpenRV.
So basically what you're actually doing is grooving people together to come up with a better, faster, and different approach to your own ideas. So this is building a community of people interested in the same initial concept you started with.
And it's not just building community around our idea. What we saw before we really started OpenRV was that there were a lot of people who wanted to build their own remotely operated vehicle anyway. And they were starting from scratch. They were finding PVC pipes and ways of attaching those with bilge pump motors because they ultimately wanted the end result, which was an ROV that works. But the problem is that everyone was kind of reinventing the wheel. Everyone gets to the first level, which is, you know, how do you get your thrusters to work? How do you get video up to the surface and telemetry down? Then you look at something like Arduino, where, you know, instead of people writing their own microcontroller code for the specific microcontroller they're using for their project, everyone's using the same base one so that you can use the code someone else developed and then add on to it. The idea of OpenROV is that we're providing something that we've put a lot of effort into making sure it's done right. You know, a base platform, we've already got the thrusters figured out. We've already got ways of communicating to the ROV figured out. And that allows people to build on to the idea rather than continuously starting from scratch. So I guess my perspective isn't really that we came up with an idea and we're using the crowd to make our idea better, is so much as we found a crowd of people who are interested in the same thing, and we've created a kind of baseline so that they can build on each other's ideas rather than each starting from scratch.
I also noticed on your website that you're interested in the one world, one ocean concept, a very positive environmental aspect.
Yeah, you know, I think so. One World, One Ocean is actually an organization. It was a campaign that they were shooting those videos. So they actually shot that video is reason that we have that there. We thought the video was really well done, but I think there is definitely an environmental aspect. I think that you know, mainly we're out to explore. I mean, and what I think what you find with people who explore, they develop a environmental consciousness. I mean, you see this with Jacques Cousteau, you see this with just about all the great explorers throughout history, is they develop that consciousness. And we're definitely concerned about, you know, you look at the statistics about all the people who are growing up indoors and all the times that kids are spending indoors and not spending outside. I think that, you know, we're not just trying to you know, fulfill our needs anymore. We think it'd be really cool if controlling an ROV was as much fun as it was to play a video game. And so I think that, you know, there is a big environmental aspect to that. It's using technology as something that we can use to engage with the environment in new ways, rather than, you know, it's video games or hanging out outside. I think there can be some kind of a middle ground.
And on behalf of the podcast, thank you for your time.
And we'd like to send out an invitation to you and to all the listeners. If this is something you're interested in, if you like underwater exploration, if you're interested in robotics or electronic software development, you know, feel free to join us. I mean, it's really a welcoming group and an open community, and there's ways to contribute right now. So if you just go to openrov.com, you know, we'd love to hear from you.
And that's all for today. You can find further information and a link to the OpenROV project on our website at robotspodcast.com. We will be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. OpenROV with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.